Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande, for Tuesday, August the 12th. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Costello.
Here.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Here.
Councilmember Arnold.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows.
Here.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Here. Item 3 is our flag salute, and this evening we have the Boy Scouts of America. Troop 26 is here to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, and then if you would please remain standing for our invocation. Pastor Robert Banker is here from the Open Door Church, and we'll conduct our invocation. Okay, gentlemen.
Shall we pray? Our eternal Father, how thankful we are for this beautiful day we have enjoyed and for the opportunity of being here tonight. We give thanks for the council and for their many hours that they donate and probably not so well paid for it in the standards of this world, but we're thankful for their time that's spent and for the wisdom that they give to the community. And Father, we pray that you would bless them in their decisions and all the things that they do. And we pray, dear Father, that they might be honored for their position. This we ask in our Savior's name. Amen.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. And we'd like to give you some airtime, if you don't mind. You can talk to us a little bit about it. If you would, go to the podium so we can catch you on camera. And tell us a little bit about what Troop 26 has been up to.
Good experience. I believe we have a couple outings coming up, such as a advancement camp out for the younger scouts to learn the basic skills they need to progress through the ranks of the Boy Scout organization and other activities like that.
Okay, very good. Anybody else? Or did he pretty much sum it up? Okay. Is Mr. Silva still involved?
He is officially retired, but he still dabbles.
Okay. Okay, good. So you got back from Philmont. How was the blister level?
Very bad.
Yeah, that's what I thought. My son went on that several years ago. We appreciate you being here tonight, and hope you'll come back again and take care of our flag salute for us. So thanks again.
Thank you very much.
All right, item 5 on our agenda is special presentations. We have none this evening. Item 6 is agenda review. Move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Item 7 is community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward with any thoughts, suggestions, recommendations on matters that are not on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any formal action on matters that are not published on the agenda. We would ask that you limit your comments to 3 minutes or less, and please address the council as one body. Once again, these are any items that are not on this evening's agenda. Anyone would like to come forward? This is an opportunity. Please come up to the microphone.
Good evening. Got to put my glasses on. My name is Tracy Del Rio, and I am a Wasna Valley resident. And I'm here because I support the Wasna Valley Association, and am concerned with the oil production or the permitting process that's before the county related to the oil exploration, production, extraction of the truck and the trucking that's going to be happening if the project is approved through Arroyo Grande City. And, you know, our association is not against oil drilling per se, but we are scrutinizing the project because of concerns related to water air, oil, noise pollution, and we want to make sure that Arroyo Grande City is up to speed about the possible problems that this project would entail for us as a community. And mostly, my concern is the traffic. 16 round trips a day through the Arroyo Grande Village, which was originally considered to go down Cherry Lane, and that was backed out by the applicant of the project. And so they're going to be rumbling these trucks through the village. And I'm concerned for the safety of our community related to this project. And also, not only it's not county, but our roads, Wasna Town Site, Wasna Road, were never built for road. I was down here this weekend walking the street, and there was lots of truck traffic as it was. And so to add 16 truck trips plus roustabout plus support vehicles, porta potties, propane trucks, it's endless. And fire danger and air quality. And I don't really want to sit out here at Andrini's and have a cup of coffee and suck up exhaust. I have a problem with that. And anyway, so we're not against it, you see, but we are concerned for the people that live here. And I live here. I love the village. I come here to the farmer's market. And I think that the Arroyo Grande City should have some very serious questions about this possibility of this happening. So am I 3 minutes, or can I keep going?
Okay. yeah, I see you lining up, and I'm sure the topic is the same. But I just wanted to let you know that this actually is on our agenda, and it's under council member items, and we are going to be discussing it, and we are going to be looking at the potential for a special meeting of the city council, and we'll probably move the venue if the council agrees that that's what we want to do. And it will be a public hearing. So we are not, by any stretch of the imagination, done with this issue. We expect that there will be quite a number of people who will want to let us know what they think about it. So our staff is working diligently on this. There's a lot of work going on behind the scenes. We are not done with this by any stretch of the imagination. So there will be a public hearing and ample opportunity, if the council concurs.
Can I just ask one question? Is this going to be before October 9th?
I think probably, was that the date that we settled on, Steve?
Well, that's the county.
Well, that's the Planning Commission.
No. Our public hearing is going to be before the County Planning Commission meeting. We had talked about a date, and
we've been having trouble coming up with a specific date, but we're trying to shoot somewhere in mid-September, so
it'll be mid-September.
No problem.
Fine, thank you.
So, thank you for being here.
Thank you. My name is Lynn Schultz, and I live at Wasna also, and this is kind of by way of introduction for those who may not have known anything about the subject heretofore. We note that the tanker trips would amount to over 50,000 before the project is finished, and even though that's quite a large number, if this project is approved, we would like to remind everybody that there could be others like it. For instance, we have reason to believe that a similar project is being considered for the Lopez area. Some of the concerns mentioned before definitely have impact on Arroyo Grande, of course, with the noise, air pollution, road wear, and safety, and pointing out that this community, of course, is known for its clean air and general lack of congestion, and these concerns would affect the residents, potential residents, village merchants, tourists who like to visit the village and the farmers market, and school children. The Wasna Valley Association has proposed a staged transportation plan involving pipelines as an alternative to trucking for the production of tar after the exploration and testing are completed. While we don't know for sure where the oil is going, so far most of the discussion has been on the haul per day during this 20 years. Extraction and transportation would require 10,000 gallons of liquid propane every few days in the beginning to be taken out to the Wasna area and burned, and those trucks would have to go through here too. And this typically increases as the process of extraction becomes more difficult. So they start with hot water, and then they're going to need steam, and in the end, diluents to get the oil out. So we are asking whether it's worth it to our community for this effort.
Okay. Once again, this is going to be a front burner item for us, so there's much more to come.
Okay, and I'm not going to read what I have here. I just want to invite you to go ahead and our website is wasnavalley.org. We've been working tirelessly for the last 2 months since we were informed by the oil company that they were on this project, and we've put together an immense amount of information, and so it's all laid out. We've got everything from newsreels and letters to the editors and such to all the documents in the county file that are all public access. So go ahead. We've got a lot of research already dug up on Grant Jengelman, who's the guy running the show for the oil company. So there's lots of information to read. And so we just wanted to come down here tonight, let you guys know that this is definitely happening in our community, and we want you folks to be part of it. I wanted to let you know. So if you have any questions, give us a call, Wasna Valley Association.
Okay. Thank you for your presentation. I expect that when we do have our public hearing, when that happens, it'll be a very thick staff report, and so we may well access your website and or have our staff do it and get some background. So appreciate it. Okay, thank you. Any other public comment? Once again, items not on this evening's agenda. Okay, if not, we'll close item 7 and we'll move to the consent agenda. This is normally a group of items that the council approves in one action. Unless there are consent items that any member of the council would like to pull for clarification or an independent action. This is also an opportunity for members of the audience to comment on any of the items that are on consent. And this evening, if you're following along on the agenda, it's consent items 8A through 8G. Any member of the public who would like to comment on any of those items, once again, this is your opportunity. Please hold your comments to 3 minutes or less. Anyone? Okay. If not, we'll close the public hearing portion of the consent agenda and bring this back to the council. What is the will of the council this evening? Any items to be pulled?
Only pulled 8B for a minor correction. And we can probably just deal with
it. 8B, boy?
Yes, the minutes.
Okay.
I think I can do it with just a comment.
Okay. And why don't we go ahead? Is it a simple correction?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
I noticed it before. I wouldn't have to pull it. But first, I'll thank Councilman Feld for pointing out to me on page 5, you have me listed as both an aye and a no on item 9B.
Well, if you make up your mind, then maybe we have
I was confused.
Commissioners who were part of that that organization. And I think I made the statement that Ross Congable was my rep for the entire time that I was on the council. That I was mistaken, and I'm very ashamed of omitting the fact that Bill Herrer was actually my appointee for the first, 5 years. And Bill's no longer with us, but he's certainly in my thoughts. But I wanted to make that correction that Ross came in after Bill Herrer. And so any other comments on consent? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve consent items 8A through 8G with 8B amended as indicated.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion. Anything in there this evening to read, Tim?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Item 8C is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande repealing Chapter 2.28 of Title II of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code to disband the Senior Advisory Commission.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. That will take us to item 9, public hearings. We have one this evening. 9A is a consideration of a countywide vector program and benefit assessment. You going to do this, Steve?
I will kick it off. We have some assistance from the county. But let me give you first a little bit overview. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. Since 2003, expansion of a countywide vector control program and formation of a benefit assessment district to fund the program has been under consideration by the county. Most counties in the state do have such districts in order to fund ongoing control of disease-transmitting insects, primarily mosquitoes. And it is becoming increasingly important the past few years due to the problems caused by the West Nile virus. The council actually adopted a resolution back in 2004 in support of a formation of a vector control district at that time. Since that time, the county has been providing some mosquito abatement services, but at that time, the Board of Supervisors voted not to continue with the process of forming the district. Forming a district would expand the program as well as to ensure that the program can be funded on an ongoing basis. Now, recently, a grand jury report recommended the county conduct a public information campaign to educate the community on the need for a vector control district. As a result of that, the Board of Supervisors have now given the go-ahead to proceed with the formation process, and I believe the county is expecting to conduct a ballot mail campaign election in May of 2009. Cities have the choice whether to participate or not. If the city council decides not to participate, that would mean that residents in Aurora Grande would not receive ballots, and if the measure were to pass, the city would not receive vector control services from the county in the future. In your agenda packet, we have prepared a resolution.
Lori Salo, I work for San Luis Obispo County Environmental Health Services. We're here tonight to request your consent in participating in the vector control program and the ballot measure. A vector is an insect or a rodent that can transmit disease to humans. On June 21st, 2007, the San Luis Obispo County Grand Jury released their 06-07 fiscal year report, the final report, which evaluated the existing mosquito abatement program and found the program to be understaffed and underfunded. Our mosquito abatement program has the fourth largest service area in the state. Unfortunately, it's the 48th of 61 programs in funding. The grand jury recommended that the Board of Supervisors conduct an educational campaign informing residents of the need for and the benefits of additional mosquito abatement and pest control, followed by a voter survey to determine the likelihood that a special assessment would pass. A voter survey was conducted in December of 07 through January of 2008. The survey found overall weighted support for the proposed benefit assessment to be 53.8%, with a margin of error of plus or minus 1.9%. The margin of error means that there is a 95% certainty that the actual levels of the support in the county are between 51.9% and 55.7% average weighted support. The benefit assessment requires a 50% plus one to pass. Countywide, since 2005, mosquito complaint responses have increased from 206 to 655 per year. The incidence of West Nile virus in animals has decreased from 60 in 2005 to 7 in 2007. There have been two human cases in San Luis Obispo County, one in 2004 and one in 2006. There's an estimated 4,500 miles of streams, 24 square miles of lakes, and 119 miles of coastline. In addition, there are an estimated 3,500 to 4,000 stormwater catch basins. All of these sources may serve as a mosquito habitat. On April 1, 2008, the board directed staff to proceed with a ballot measure to create a benefit assessment that would provide permanent funding annually for a vector control program. Environmental health staff was directed to meet with city officials and request their consent to participate in the program and the ballot measure. Each city has the option of participating in the vector control program. If a city wishes to not participate in the program, then properties in that city will not be sent a ballot, and the property owners will not participate in the ballot proceedings. Properties within the city would then not receive services from the program. We're asking that each city decide two issues. One, whether or not to allow the county to provide vector control services within the city limits, and two, whether or not to allow property owners within the city limits to participate in the Proposition 218 ballot measure to fund the program. The ballot measure is planned for May 2009, and it will be conducted by a mail-out ballot. The cost of the ballot will be paid for by the county. The estimated assessment for a single-family residence is approximately $9.80 per year. Other types of properties that would have different assessments, for example, a 100-unit apartment complex would be approximately $162.60 per year, and about a 20-acre shopping center would be approximately $390. It's an education primarily for mosquitoes, ticks, fleas, and rodents, and provide abatement services for mosquitoes. Again, we're asking that you decide two issues tonight. One, whether or not to allow the county to provide vector control services within the city limits, and two, whether or not to allow property owners within the city limits to participate in the proposition ballot measure to fund the program. This concludes my presentation, and I can answer any questions you have.
Actually, I do have a couple of quick questions. When the survey went out, did the survey indicate the nature of the assessment? In other words, did it explain to people that the benefits of the program and also that it was going to be a property tax assessment?
It did, it provided the services and it provided the amount that those people would most likely pay.
Okay. So the assessment piece of this is not a surprise to folks.
Okay.
And that was considered in their response.
Correct.
The other question I had was on our staff report on page 3, it talks about the fact that if a city does not participate in the program, property owners in that city will not be sent a ballot, will not participate in the ballot proceedings, and will not receive services from the program if it's approved and ultimately goes into effect.
That's correct.
I'm to assume then that if it were to happen that way, that they would not be assessed. Is that correct?
Correct. They wouldn't be sent the ballot, which means they wouldn't be assessed the amount.
Okay. So they would not essentially be contributing to a program that they chose for whatever reason not to participate in.
Correct.
Okay. And then my last question is on the resolution itself. I was just a little curious about adopting a resolution that allowed the county to provide a vector control service in Arroyo Grande and to conduct essentially a mail-out ballot. Shouldn't we be doing the ballot mail-out first and getting a response back and finding out whether our citizens, in fact, want this to happen and then approve the program? Or
we would need to determine the number of residences participating because that plays into the formula of figuring out the assessment. And I believe if you were to choose to move forward and allow the ballot within your city, then your citizens would decide at that point.
Well, I have no problem deciding, you know, approving something that says, okay, let's go ahead and do the election. But am I reading this wrong? I could be. Is this saying that we're adopting a resolution allowing the county to provide vector control services in Arroyo Grande and to conduct a mail-out benefit assessment ballot measure? So I guess my question is, you're asking us to approve a program before the results of the election come back in. I'm just a little puzzled by that.
Excuse me. My name is Kurt Batson. I'm the Director of Environmental Health. The answer to your question is, in order for us to be able to provide the services in the event that the ballot measure passes, you also have to authorize us to provide the service. So it
won't want it, and we've already passed a resolution approving it, program.
Yeah, so really what you're authorizing is us just to conduct a ballot measure. And the result of that ballot measure will determine whether or not we can provide a program.
Okay. All right. Any other questions?
Just a quick clarification. Didn't you say that there's already been a mail survey conducted a few years ago and the results were 60-some percent acceptance of the idea in Arroyo Grande?
We recently conducted a survey with the assessment amount on that. It was a random population. We didn't survey everybody. They picked different components of each, you know, commercial, residential. And the results of that survey was the ones we reported on as 65.5% in favor.
Okay, thank you. One more thing. I didn't see it in our staff report, but maybe you could give me a little bit of information as to what you're using now and what you'd be using later in the way of spraying or whatever you do to kill the mosquitoes. especially after what went on up in was it Monterey County or in Santa Cruz with the it's quite a controversy over that program.
Yeah, there's two elements to this program. The program that happens 99.99% of the time is a preventative program. As it relates to mosquitoes, you primarily treat larvae. Once the mosquitoes are adults, they're hard to find. Quite honestly, they're flying around, so it's harder to treat them. So we treat them at the larval stage, and when we're using the larval stage or the larvicides, they're actually a bacterium that's unique to mosquito larvae, and it's not put in a liquid, it's put in actually a granular format. So you don't have much in the way of overspray or drift or anything like that. It's just a granular material that gets put directly on in the body of water.
How's it delivered to the body of water, or the bodies of water?
Well, primarily it's done through several different land-based applicators. On occasion, we have used in large bodies of water where we can't get to all the water, they have used helicopters to actually apply it. But that's pretty limited, and it's because it's very expensive, for one thing. And it doesn't get done very often. It's almost all land-based, either from an ATV type of a rig where you can get around the perimeters of property, or just on foot. The people we hire have to be in pretty good shape because they have to hike down carrying backpacks full of larvicides.
And this is the same thing that you can buy at Miners. It looks like black pepper. You put it in your aquariums. You put it in your ponds. You put it in your bird baths. Not harmful to anything other than mosquitoes.
That's correct.
All right, thank you.
It's essentially the same material.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. This is a public hearing. If any member of the audience would like to come forward and comment on 9A, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay. Seeing none, we'll close the public.
Went up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see you back there.
This is new to me, so it may be covered somewhere else. My name is Richard Waller, and she mentioned that the cost would vary between single-family residences and apartments. And my curiosity, we farm in this.
Our example is a 1,000-acre open range type land. That comes to be about $16. For irrigated agriculture, a 100-acre property, as an example, is $8.23.
Per year?
Per year.
Per acre?
No, $8.23 for a 100-acre parcel. Those are just examples that we have. Again, each individual ballot will have the exact amount that property owner is being asked to decide on whether or not they want to approve it. So it won't be an estimate. It won't be an example. It'll be the exact amount.
Specific to their property.
Specific to their property.
Okay. Okay. Anyone else? Going once, going twice? Okay, now we'll close the public hearing portion of 9A and bring this back to the council. And Councilmember Guthrie, why don't you start us off?
Well, I think given the fact that we have the creek running right through our city and the number of retention basins that we have within our city, that clearly this is something that we at least want to give the people of Arroyo Grande the opportunity to participate in. So I'm certainly in favor of moving forward as proposed. Thanks.
Excuse me. Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The issue of vector control is an important issue to all of us who live here. The fact that it's underfunded has been stated, and I believe that to be the case. I do support putting this on the ballot, and I will support passing it, too. I think that it is a reasonable thing for our county services to provide them. Certainly they do it more efficiently than we would at the city, and it would be a lot more expensive for us to try to do it on our own. So I support putting this on the ballot, and I will support passing it once it's on the ballot.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I, too, can support this. The rates are very reasonable. I'm glad that the citizens will have an opportunity to actually vote on it, and I too would support seeing it passed when it does get on the ballot. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
If we can reduce the incidence of West Nile virus and encephalitis and dog heartworm and hantavirus and plague and Lyme and so on for a very, very nominal yearly charge, I don't think a person that has a regular city-sized lot could go to Miners and for $9.80 get a year's supply of the larvicide. So, of course, I can support this.
Okay, thank you. I can't think of any reason why we would not want to do this. And I'm sure there's not going to be any issue with the election. I'm sure it'll come back and favor this. And so, pending the outcome of the election, which we all think is going to be a moot issue, I too can support this as well. I think it's a good program. It's a much needed program, and much better to err on the side of caution. And that's essentially what we're doing in the public health arena. So I can support this as well. If there's no other discussion on this, did you have something, Jim?
I was going to read the motion.
Okay, then I will accept him. I saw you with a glass slick. Didn't know. Okay. One, interchange. Good evening, Don.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. This evening, we'd like to present the most recent alternative for the Briscoe Road interchange project for the council's consideration. You know, since our last presentation in November, the council directed us to apply to SLOCOG for project funding. However, SLOCOG was unable to fund the project without it being more defined and without Caltrans approval. However, subsequent to the SLOCOG meeting earlier this year, the council formed a subcommittee to reconsider all the alternatives. And I'd like to thank Mayor Ferrara and Councilmember Arnold for serving on that subcommittee and providing input in the process of looking at all of the alternatives. Several meetings were held. There was one in March and April, and which helped to define the project alternative that we will be presenting tonight. And with that, I'd like to introduce Tina Chan and Mark Rayback with Wood Rogers and Associates. They're going to be going through the alternative that we prepared. So, Mark.
Thanks, Don. Again, I'd like to also echo what Don said. I appreciate all the help that we got from Councilmember Arnold and Mayor Farrar on this. As Don said, there was a lot of relooking at all the alternatives with kind of a fresh set of glasses and going back through and trying to determine what the best course of action might be to take in this area. Before we jump into that picture, I'd just like to do a real quick summary of kind of where we've been. First, I think it's probably no news to anybody, but the need and purpose of the project: improve traffic operations and queuing at Briscoe, improve traffic operations and queuing at Grand Avenue, and also improve the State Route 101 ramp and mainline operations through the city. A little bit on the efforts to date, just to expand a little bit on what was kind of already said, is this project has been around in one shape or form for a number of years. There's been numerous potential solutions identified. The environmental document was being prepared for three alternatives, the ones that we spoke with you in November about. At that meeting, I think, the council made it pretty clear they preferred what was then called Alternative 3, which you probably all recall. If not, I've got a drawing here I can dig out, and we can talk about that. As Don mentioned, the project development team that includes Caltrans and SLOCOG, we really struggled with coming to a consensus on a preferred alternative, and we missed some SLOCOG dates, and again, that's why the subcommittee was formed and really went back and looked at not only the three alternatives that were being studied for environmental document, but also was there something else out there that maybe made a little more sense. With that, we've come up with what we're calling Alternative 3A, and I'm going to save you the pain of going through that. I work better with pictures, being an engineer, so... Some of the features that are consistent with the alternatives you've already seen is down at Camino Mercado. As we talked last time, the traffic demand indicates that dual left turns in a bit further to the south at Grand Avenue. Of course, this is something that you've seen before, and that's the realignment of the southbound on-ramp at Grand, basically bringing it up opposite the off-ramp. In realigning that, it gives us a little more space along here to do the striping to handle the turn volumes. Where, again, where most of the effort has come in is in this stretch on West Branch Street. As you recall, there was earlier proposed on-ramp here. You'll see in the revised that we've proposed both an off and an on-ramp that would be built opposite Old Ranch Road. Again, as you come up Branch Street, you've seen a version before. There's some realignment. We actually adjusted this a bit, and we're able to maintain this connection, this existing connection at Vernon Street. And then on the existing West Branch, we would propose a small cul-de-sac at the end here. Now, there is three or four houses here that have driveways. They would still be able to access those from West Branch. These houses in this stretch here, they don't have driveways down to West Branch. However, they do have access typically via some stairs. And so I guess what we would envision here when this section of the street is closed off is to maintain their access, we'd propose some landscaping, maybe some, you know, sidewalks or walks through this area. Again, to create that pedestrian opportunity to come down the house and down into the village, potentially. Finally, as you get here at the Grand Avenue northbound off-ramp, you'll see that there's a kind of a triangle island proposed here and a smaller one here. It might be easier on your large drawings, but one of the main issues that kind of occurs with this alternative is there, as we all know, Caltrans has a design policy against streets opposite of a ramp, and that's exactly what's occurring here. They typically like about 600 feet separation between the two, which we simply don't have that luxury. What we're able to come up with in working with the subcommittee is the idea that these two pork chop, if you will, or island-type facilities could be potentially raised somewhat, maybe landscaped, but definitely create that positive barrier that would prohibit anybody from accidentally going straight through and down the freeway the wrong way. So, with enhanced signing, striping, and then these barriers, landscaping, we would propose that this is a pretty good solution to correcting that issue. As well, of course. Again, it's a Caltrans design exception, and I think we talked extensively about that last time. So,
does Caltrans accept that type of a solution to this problem?
Well, I guess that's a tough question. There's an acceptance process, and that's the design exception process. So, essentially, what we would do is take this alternative, and we have some next steps here that we can go over. But take this to Caltrans and start that design exception process. Maybe we'll go to the next slide and we can talk about that. I guess next steps for us, as directed, this has been really just the city subcommittee and city staff and us working together to hash this out. I think one of the next steps, as we kind of talked about at our last meeting, was to approach Caltrans and SLOCOG probably at the management level at first and basically explain what we've gone through and kind of what our intents and hopes are and start that sort of that discussion again, if you will. As I mentioned, there was environmental studies begun on three alternatives. We stopped those when sort of we had some uncertainty, so we would need to reinitiate that. That's really the only presentation I have. I would recommend maybe we back up to the drawing in case there's questions. Perfect. I guess I'd look to you if you had questions or anything to add.
Well, just wanted to add a couple of comments to that. I've already indicated to SLOCOG that our next step is to meet with them, and so Rhonda Carley and help me out,
Rich Murphy,
and both of them are willing to sit down and meet with us. What I want to do is sort of take this a progressive step at a time, and so. Through that process, we can allow SLOCOG to sort of vet it, come up with some. If they have any concerns, we'd much rather hear it from them and see if there's a fix to it, and then take it together to Caltrans, because I believe that it would serve us much better if we were working in concert with SLOCOG and they were working together with us as well on this. So that's. That's what I would propose as the next step, and it's consistent with the slide that you showed. So that's sort of the parallel effort that's working along with this, pending the outcome of tonight. So any other questions for Mark at this point?
Well, maybe for the subcommittee as well, but can you go back to the series of steps?
The next steps here?
Yeah. I'm just trying to get a sense of the timing because, as we discussed, this has been going on a long time.
Right.
The timing for instance, for SLOCOG, you know, what kind of timing are we looking at to go through that process to get it ready to then submit the complete project report to Caltrans? I'm just trying to get a sense of, are we looking at 6 months or a year? Because
we're looking at the 2010 cycle, if I'm not mistaken. We're looking at 2010.
Well, the STIP cycle. Right. But I'm thinking about how far down the road are we going to be before we know whether we have the Caltrans approval. I don't want to get up against – here's where I'm going. I don't want to get up against another STIP cycle deadline and
we're then moving this thing as fast as we possibly can to get postured for that,
and
for that cycle.
And how fast do you think that is?
Well, I think, you know, the 2010 STIP cycle in October or the fall of 2009 is when we need to submit our application. So between now and the fall of 2009 is when we need to get Caltrans to, if not approve it completely, at least approve a draft of the project approval and the document that we're preparing. So we need to get that approval by the fall of
before that time.
Yes,
I would think well before that time.
Well, as much before as we can. Yeah.
Okay. That's kind of an answer. I'm just trying to get a sense. I hate first to get up like we did last time to get right up against the deadline and then realize that gee, we're not quite there again. And that's my concern. I'd actually like to see us maybe move back the timetable and revisit this, you know, at 6 months. So April of 2009. And see where we're at 6 months out. I think that's to see if we're still online to make that deadline.
Well, we can talk about that when we get into final discussion, but I can tell
you. What's planned for the expansion of Briscoe? Is that – did I read in this it's kind of delayed in terms of the particulars on what we're going to do with the bore itself?
It's interesting that our traffic model shows that if we make the other improvements that we get – we're figuring somewhere between 10 and 12 years of useful life out of the existing structure. You pull the ramps out and you really reduce a lot of those conflicts. And so what we would probably propose is kind of a phased approach where we would build the stuff near Grand Avenue first, and then we'd kind of monitor traffic and have a second phase of the project when necessary to widen the bridge. And it really works out for funding as well, obviously. So.
Thank you.
Okay. This is not a public hearing, but we typically do allow input on our major business items, and this is certainly one of them. So anyone would like to come forth and make a comment or ask a question, please feel free to do so. If you would state your name again for the record.
Yes, my name is Anna Gabriel. I have a question in regards to the other map. I drive a big mixer truck. I've been driving in this area for about 5-6 years, driving mixer trucks and school buses and such. And I'm not seeing the on-ramp onto the 101 from Grand Avenue heading north. And I'm not understanding.
Okay.
I need
– sure.
What, was that your only question?
Well, because if I was to have to go down there in my truck, I would never – be able to get up the hill. It takes so long to get up to speed. I'd be entering onto the freeway at such a slow speed. It would be much more dangerous. So I never ever get on at that Briscoe Road area. I always come back to Grand because by the time I get up to on that hill where about the Oak Park exit is, I'm barely getting up to speed by then. And if I was to get on the freeway any closer than that, it would be a hazard.
Okay.
I don't understand where the Grand Avenue entrance is onto the freeway. I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, it's gone. If you want to go ahead and elaborate on that, Mark.
I can try to run through this. So the existing Grand Avenue on-ramp, as you said, is right here and joins the freeway about this point. What we would propose now, so for that northbound move, you would turn right on West Branch, come down here, make a left onto this new hook ramp, and then enter the freeway here. So it is a little bit closer to the hill. However, if you go out in this area, you'll see that this is quite a bit higher than the elevation of the freeway. So you'd have some aid in your acceleration in that that's a downhill ramp, if you will. So you come around the ramp and you're going to drop down to freeway level. So, and we've run all the truck turn templates and we've done the acceleration look there based on all the Caltrans standards, and everything seems to fit and work.
Okay, well, as a trucker and a bus driver, I would never want to do that. So that, okay, that wouldn't be convenient or okay, safe for me.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right, we'll close the public comment portion of 10A, and we'll bring this back to the council, and we'll start at the other end with Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, obviously, I've had an opportunity to see a lot of this and have a lot of discussion. It has not been an easy process, as I think everyone on the council knows, because we definitely have tried to move the Briscoe on and off ramp, and this actually solution allows us to close those and open the new ones and get an actual a positive gain. So there was obviously a lot of challenge with what happens with the little section that has now become a cul-de-sac, how that was going to tie in and everything else. I'm very pleased with what we've come up with. I think the barriers are very reasonable, and so let's hope that reasonableness will prevail with Caltrans. But I can definitely support this. The one thing I would like to also comment on that has been a benefit that is kind of obvious, but it's not being said, is that by moving the West Branch Street location, we now gain a light there. And I think that is a big asset to the community itself. So not only are we solving an issue with the Briscoe interchange, but we're also making now we should be taking pressure off of the neighborhood where people that use Vernon Street to come up and align in with Traffic Way to get the light there. Now they won't have to do that to make a left-hand turn. They can continue straight, which would be southbound, get to Grand Avenue, and then make the turn at the light there. So I think there's a lot of benefit to the community with this plan. I'm crossing my fingers because I know that nothing is going to be easy, but I do believe that the mayor has done a very good job of laying out an optimistic but possible plan with who we're going to be meeting with. Mark has done an excellent job as well. So I think everybody's on the same page at this point, so hopefully everyone can support it, but I can definitely. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
I was going to comment on the potential traffic light that would then be at West Branch and Grand. I think that's a definite improvement. All in all, I think that this is probably the most acceptable alternative that we've seen. The fact that we buy some extra time for the bore and don't need to expand the underpass at Briscoe is a positive. I can support this, and I look forward to it going forward. I just regret that it's going to take several years to get to where we need to be.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, I too can support this. I mean, this is by far the best alternative of all of the alternatives that are out there. My concern remains that we keep chasing this alternative and missing opportunities to make some other improvement that may ultimately be out there. So, I mean, in reflecting on the October 9th date, obviously, there would, even if we reviewed it earlier than that, there wouldn't be time to put together another alternative before the 2010 STIP cycle anyway. So I can certainly support this, and we'll pursue it until October and see where we end up. Thanks. Okay.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I certainly appreciate the work that that Wood Rogers has done. Of course, they got paid handsomely for that, I'm sure, but Ed and the mayor, there's a lot of work went into it to solve this really problem that's been with us a long time. It gets worse all the time. I really like to mention the improvement at the southbound off-ramp from the freeway to Grand and being realigned to coincide with the southbound on-ramp. I think that's a good thing. And especially, I think we all went down and passed beneath the freeway when Briscoe with the two ramps were closed and traffic to alleviate the traffic coming off the freeway, or the thought that we come off the freeway and go zooming up Old Ranch Road, which I don't think anybody would do that. What is that a real possibility, or is that something that we're going to continue to look into?
Well, I think we're going to continue to look into it, but I wanted to make it clear that the cul-de-sac was up further on Old Ranch where the houses actually end, and so it would not be down close to the intersection with West Branch, allowing a stretch of road there that would be fronting the whatever facility that's proposed to be built.
Right, so that's something that you're going to continue to evaluate.
Absolutely,
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I can certainly support this, and again, I hope it happens sooner rather than later.
Okay, thank you. Well, it obviously helps our cause if we have unanimous support, and I want to thank the council for recognizing a couple of things. First and foremost is I think we, Donald, certainly support this. We've been at this now for, 10 years? 10 solid years. Ever since Five City Center went in, we predicted the traffic impacts would occur and that there was not proper mitigation for that center when it was first built. And it turned out that those observations were accurate. We've been battling the traffic at Briscoe ever since. And we talk about the possibility of looking at other alternatives. I cannot remember in my time on the council thoroughly examining the intricacies of this traffic segment, looking at so many different alternatives and proposing one formally and coming up blank, being unsuccessful with getting funding through Caltrans and the COG. I think the prior studies have examined virtually all different twists and turns to this particular project. One thing that we found out early on is that there is no such thing as just the Briscoe Road, Halcyon 101, the behavior of that intersection. What happens there impacts Grand Avenue. It impacts Camino Mercado, and to an extent it even impacts Oak Park. All three or four of those intersections are connected in some way because of the traffic pattern. If you do something to one, something happens to the others. And so that's why we had to look for planning purposes. We had to look at the entire freeway segment as it relates to access through Aurora Grande. Speaking of access, one of the other things that we were concerned about was actually the future of West Branch Street. If you look at this particular area in here, we've been planning for a community center to go in there. It'll be a fairly big facility, busy facility. If this is approved, it will now have quick freeway access. Farther down Branch Street, we're looking at, again, at the possibility of relocating our public safety facility, our police station. Once again, they will have good freeway access and good circulation. So when we start looking at the – I've also had some quick sidebars with Rich Krumholtz, and he understands we're working on something, and he's anxious to see it. So we'll keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best. I am optimistic, and I'll stay that way, and we'll see this thing through. Okay, with that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to propose that we adopt the alternative 3A as the revised preferred alternate for the Briscoe Road, Halcyon Road, Highway 101 Interchange Improvement Project, and direct staff and the City Council Subcommittee to pursue approval and funding through the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments and Caltrans.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. Okay, that takes it. Everybody okay? We're going to take a quick 10-minute break, and then we will reconvene at roughly 8:20. Okay, everybody ready? All right. Council's back in session. And we are at item 11, new business. Item 11A is consideration of appointment of a voting delegate and alternate for the League of Cities. Steve?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. It's about that time again. The League of California Cities annual conference is coming up in September. And about this time, they normally ask us to designate our delegates and a delegate and alternate delegate for the conference. The conference is scheduled to take place this year, September 24th to the 27th in Long Beach at the Convention Center. One important activity of the conference is the annual business meeting, and that will be held on Saturday, the 27th at 8:30, when the membership takes action on conference resolutions. And that's the primary purpose of the delegates. Each city has a delegate that represents them in that vote, and then can also approve up to one alternate delegate, although that's not required. So for this conference, thus far, we believe Mayor Ferrara is the only one that's currently confirmed to definitely attend the conference. So I think the intent is to get some feedback if any others are planning on attending, and then get feedback from the council on who would you like to select as a delegate so that we can transmit that information to the league for the conference.
Okay. Well, we just need to know who's going to be there and who isn't. I don't mind doing it, but I've got a whole long list of other things going on for that
conference down in Long Beach this year.
And I'll second that.
Okay. Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes, thanks. Steve, are there staff going to the annual conference this year? I know the travel situation.
Yeah. As of right now, I don't believe so. But we haven't checked with everybody yet. There may turn out to be a couple, but we'll confirm that in the next few days.
Okay. It'd be nice if we could have, you know, one or two people from staff there so we have some representation, but I understand the constraints. So
I'll work on it and see if it works in with any of their travel plans for this year.
Okay. Alrighty, thanks. We'll go to 11B, consideration of proposed short and long-term water supply strategies.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. If you allow me to change hats, I'd like to present the short and long-term water supply alternatives this evening. Our existing supplies consist of groundwater and surface water from Lake Lopez. Our present consumption, based on the last 12-month period, is upwards of about 99%. So we wanted to present some alternatives for council consideration to reduce that. The projected future water needs, in the short term, we feel that 100 to 200 acre feet would be sufficient, but in the long term, I think 400 to 500 acre feet would be more appropriate. Previously, council gave direction on short-term supply alternatives, and I'd like to briefly just give you a back status of what's been happening in those areas. In the water conservation, this is the plumbing retrofit program. We've had a reduction of 60 acre feet of water per year of consumption. That's an estimated amount. That equates to about 1,411 single-family homes that have been retrofitted, 491 apartments, and 93 mobile homes to get to that 60 acre feet. We've been involved in doing some public education. We developed some brochures. One of them went out as an informational flyer in the water utility bills. We've had various articles in the city's newsletter, slides on cable TV, Station 20, and the website has links to various public information on water conservation. We've also the council adopted tiered water rates in June a couple years back. It was implemented in early January of 06. We've constructed well 10. The construction is now complete. We did have some problems with the interior liner, but that's now been corrected, and we recently completed a two-week pump test to determine what the capacity of that well is, and that information will be presented to the council in the next few weeks or so. The council also asked us to look into the Price Canyon oil field. As you know, there was going to be an expansion of that oil field requiring water to steam to remonitoring to see just how much that might be. And, of course, that will be in coordination with the other agencies that are in the gentleman's agreement. That's the City of Grover Beach and Pismo Beach and OCSD. We were asked to look into Nacimiento Lake. We did an initial study, and it was determined based on that study that desalination was the most cost-effective of those two alternatives. We looked at recycled water. There was a study that was performed in 2001 that's indicated that additional treatment was going to be required, and of course construction of a pipeline to transport the water to the sites that was that would be receiving that water. The study concluded that because the sites are spread out so far, that was not really the most cost-effective. State water, we're still working with the county. Even though that's a complicated issue, we're still working with the county to identify some potential purchase of state water. Now I'd like to look at some of the proposed. We've looked at some of those, and there's some other options that we have come up with, and so I'd like to also have the council look at some of the alternatives, the new alternatives that we have come up with. Well 9 is an existing well that the city has on Oak Park. We'd like to get one of the recommendations this evening is to provide additional funding to provide treatment to produce 100 acre feet. Traditionally, we've used 70 acre feet from that well, but it is and was designed for 100, and we'd like to get funding to make that possible. That would be an increase of about 30 acre feet. Of course, we talked about well 10. We completed the pump testing, and we will be bringing the pump test results to you for consideration. There's a potential for 50 to 80 acre feet of water there. Expansion of the water conservation program. Now that we have the plumbing retrofit, which we'd like to continue to do, even though the number of participants is dropping, we'd still like to continue that program to get as many as possible. But we would like to expand that to include irrigation use. And we'd like to target the largest users of irrigation water first, and so that we can try to get the biggest bang for our buck up front. There's a potential there for another 50 to 100 acre feet of savings. We have been working with the Halcyon Road Mobile Home Parks. There's two parks out there that we have on a temporary source at the moment. That agreement ends in December of this year. I understand they've been discussing this with the Oceano Community Service District, and I believe that they're close to having some agreement on how that'll happen. One of the potentials there is that the city will wheel the water through our system to the park. The potential savings there is about 7 acre feet. The Pearwood Basin well test, we have a recommendation for the council to appropriate $30,000 for us to do a test. One of the most important items this evening in the recommendations is the adoption of a resolution to enact the Municipal Code conservation measures. This is level 3 of 4 levels in the code. This is because of the use of 90% of our available supply. I'd just like to run through quickly the items in that conservation measure. One of them, the first one here, is to use water which results in excess runoff is prohibited. So anytime we see water running down the gutter, we'd like to know about it so we can contact that homeowner to turn that off. No water for cleaning of driveways or patios, parking lots, sidewalks, streets, or other such use, except as necessary to protect the public health and safety, which would include steam cleaning of the sidewalks after Strawberry Festival, something on that order. Outdoor water use for washing vehicles will be allowed but has to be used by a hand-controlled watering device, such as the spring-loaded nozzles that you most of us have. Outdoor irrigation would be prohibited between 10 and 4, which are the warmer type, which is the warmer part of the day, to avoid that evapotranspiration. Irrigation of private and public landscaping, namely turf areas, will be permitted at even number addresses only on Monday and Thursday, and at odd number addresses on Tuesday and Friday. No irrigation on Wednesday, but there will be irrigation permitted at all addresses on Saturdays and Sundays. But I would caution that, you know, the homeowners are only to be using only the water that they actually necessarily need. emptying and refilling swimming pools and commercial spas would be prohibited except to prevent structural damage. And the use of potable water for soil compaction or dust control purposes in construction activities is prohibited. We do have a well site at the corporation yard that's used to fill water trucks and things like that. We just want to make sure that everyone is aware of that. So those are the short-term strategies. The long-term strategies that we're proposing are, of course, the desalination plant. We've completed the feasibility study, and we're going to be presenting that to you for your consideration. The feasibility study addressed all of the components necessary to provide desalination and the costs. So we're presenting that to you fairly shortly. One thing that's come up that our technical committee for the county in Zone 3 came up with a increased capacity at Lake Lopez, and the way we would do that is to raise the spillway so that we can maintain more water behind the dam, therefore increasing the safe yield and potentially additional water supplies to the city. We're working with the county on that. There is a study that was completed that showed that that is feasible. The cost is doable, and so we'll be presenting that to you for your consideration here shortly. The groundwater study that was performed, recycled water, we're going to update some of the options that were presented in the 2001 study for further analysis. There was a couple of things in there that I think might be advantageous at this point, and we'd like to take a closer look at that. We won't take a look at the full study, but maybe just one or two of the items that are in that study. Namely, bringing the recycled water to one or two of the largest water users. For instance, maybe the cemetery and Caltrans or some of the ones that are grouped closest together. State water, even though it's complicated, I think that we're going to be recommending that, even though that it's a high cost and it's unreliable in the drought conditions, I think that we're still going to be at least keeping our ear to the ground with the county to see if something might be available there. So this evening, the recommendations are long. We have five recommendations. The first is to adopt a resolution declaring this severely restricted water supply condition and enacting the mandatory conservation measures. To approve a one-year extension of the agreement with our plumbing retrofit contractor. Again, to appropriate some money from the water fund to purchase the equipment at Well 9. And to appropriate some money for the test well at the Pearwood Basin. And lastly, to continue efforts regarding the proposed short and long-term water strategies to continue to develop and refine those for council consideration. So with that, Mr. Mayor, I'll conclude my presentation and be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Mayor, could I just clarify that last recommendation on the long and short range strategies? this evening what we're really looking at is approval to proceed with the short-range strategies we've recommended. We've set forth the long-range strategies, but they all have studies in the works that we hope to bring back concurrently within a couple months. We will have results on each of those so we can have one presentation where we go through and prioritize those and get some direction at that time from Council on moving ahead with the long-term strategies.
Okay, thanks. Has there been any follow-up on our the recent meeting we had with Oceano? Or is that something we're continuing to pursue?
Based on that discussion, we have already prepared a draft that we'd like to consider, and within these recommendations this evening is getting direction from you to staff for us to go ahead and submit that to them for their consideration.
Okay. Questions on the staff report? We'll start with Councilmember Costello and then Councilmember Arnold.
Okay, thank you. One quick question on the some of the conservation issues that we want to enact now that are in the municipal code. You had a slide for it. It might be easier to come back to that. Okay. Now, I guess we're reaching the point where we're going to start to ask people to be a little bit more conservative in how they water their lawns. Mm-hmm. And I'm making the assumption that this is sort of a self-police type situation. We're not going to have staff out there wandering around looking at how people are watering their lawns and such. And just I want to address the practical issues in how they're using water.
I think that's the goal. I think that's the goal is to get them to be as efficient as possible at their irrigation. And, it touched on whether we're going to go out policing this thing. I'm not so sure they're going to have a water cop out there, but I think what we do want to do is during the day when we do notice water running down the gutter and we do identify the residents that is doing that, our intention is to put a door flyer on their door and follow up with them at some point. And, we have a lot of staff out there running around on a daily basis, and I think that we'll be looking for those things. Now, but the idea is to get them to comply voluntarily, to identify the things that they may be doing wrong, and to help them, irrigate as efficiently as possible.
Key is awareness, then.
Awareness.
And I would like to congratulate the city. I know I had a notice came to my house about 5-6 weeks ago. We had a bad valve that we didn't realize was leaking, and we were able to discover that and fix it. So I do want to thank the city for bringing that to my attention. It did save us some water.
I did want to make sure your first part of your question got answered, though, because I think the expectation is if you have – I mean, most people have a general computerized control of their sprinkling frequencies, and I think the expectation is to provide some education so they would alter those cycles so that they would match the requirements within the code. But as Don said, we're not going to have police out there. We have a lot of people out in the field to be looking at this, and it'll be a public education process. There'd be public information and eventually warnings, and really the only continual egregious violators would be the ones that we would have to come forward with something a little more enforcement related.
The tiered rates that we put into effect in 2005, do we have any kind of idea what, if any, savings they've generated?
We did look at various groups when we did a follow-up based on council direction, and we did appear to gain a reduction in the first couple of years of about 10%, which is what our projection was. And so we did realize some savings in based on the tiered rates.
Was there any discussion about either adding an additional tier or affecting the rates again in the higher tiers again?
Well, I think that's going to be addressed. We're in the process of doing a a new water and sewer rate study. We have a contractor who's going to help us do that, and I think that's one of the aspects of this new look at the tiered rate system, whether we need to break down the rates again further to a 5. We have 4 now. We may want to go to 5, depending on this new study.
Yeah, the discussion of the rates, we'd heard a lot of different goals from the different counties.
Test check.
Okay. Can you hear me now? Okay. Turning it on works good, too. Because I guess my question or comment, kind of a tear in that, is that obviously if we're either saving water, then there's a benefit, and if we're charging more for it, then we, in theory, have money to buy additional sources from somewhere, whether it's raising dam outflows or desal. So I guess that was the only reason why I'm suggesting it, because I think, as you know, I've been more a proponent of those who want water should be able to buy it. If it's just more expensive, then, you know, you can make a decision. Also, on this increasing the capacity at Lopez, do we have any idea what kind of loss? I guess we're in a drought right now. We've been in a drought for several years. A lot of experts are saying we're going to be going forward with droughts. And so I guess, is there actually water that's being – I mean, the lake seems pretty low to me right now. So do we actually foresee that as being an effective capture if we raise the spillway? Or is water ever going out the spillway, I guess, right now or in the last several years?
Well, in the last several years, no, water has not been going over the spillway. I think we got up to a high of 90% when we had the rains about 3 years ago. And, of course, it has been steadily dropping. We're in the low 70% now. But, yes, we do foresee a time when it's going to rain, and there will be water in being captured by the lake, and the water will rise up to a point at some period when we have enough rain to be exceeding the spillway. And at that point is when we want to have that portable dam in place so that we can capture that water and, you know, increase the safe yield.
I know I've seen the chart before. Do you recall in, like, say, the last 10 years or even 20 years, how many times – we would have captured rain that has been lost? And just kind of a sense of, you know, how reliable is that source, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Well, it's been documented over the years of when water has gone over the spillway. And I think I remember when I first came, there was a time during that winter when water went over the spillway. And that was used to calculate surplus water at that time. So it's a cycle. And so it'll be coming around again to where there's plenty of water. And there's a potential for, you know, spilling.
I think we're waiting for that report because that's going to provide a more detailed analysis on that and how that, once it gets up to a higher level, what that means to us on an ongoing annual basis, you know, when you prorate out that water over time.
So mm-hmm.
That'll be the key thing we'll all want to look at in the report, I think.
And the last question is on the Oceano water. We're talking about a 2-year extension. Is there a reason why we're – because I know there's been some difficulty in obtaining this one, is that we wouldn't want to do a 10-year extension since I think most long-term are 10-year timeframes, and I see smiling.
Yes, basically because we proposed a 10-year extension, and it got denied. And then we looked at some other concepts, and at this point we decided it might be most feasible just to go back to at this time.
All right. That's all I have. Thank you.
Did you have one more quick question?
I had one more quick question. Don, you were talking about well number 9, wanting to fund the cost for full treatment. What is that cost?
We had $12,000 in the recommendation this evening.
Great. Thank you.
Is that it?
That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem.
A couple of things, Don. Some of the measures sound kind of odd. Not on Wednesdays, but all you want on Saturday and Sunday. I'm not doubting you. Did you do a peer review to see what these measures – I'm sorry. Did you arrive at these measures by doing a peer review with what works in other communities?
Yes. Actually, these particular items are picked from other communities, nearby communities.
Okay, thanks. And then my last question is, When a private party sells their home and they have their own well, they do a well drawdown test and coliform count and so on. And my recollection is that cost, I don't know, $2,000 more or less. What will we be getting for a $30,000 well test?
We'll be getting, we'll get the knowledge that if there is water there or not. Where is it in proportion? What is the depth of that water? And what is the quality of that water? Is it good for irrigation? Is it good for potable? Is it no good? You know, so it's about three main objectives of drilling the test well.
I keep remembering the $600 hammers that the Army paid, you know, bought. And it just seems to me, I'd just like to have more information on what we'll be getting for the $30,000 because a private party pays like a tenth of that, I think. So appreciate having that.
Well, I think we're getting a well. It's not just a test. We're actually drilling. We're putting a well in, are we not?
We're going to be doing a small bore test hole to determine, you know, at the information that I discussed, the depth, the water quality, and the amount.
Okay, so there is not a well there right now, if I'm correct.
That's correct.
Okay.
Well, okay. Thanks, Ed. Makes more sense. Thank you. That's all.
All right. Did you have a question?
Okay. Once again, this is not a public hearing, but obviously an important business item. And if there is any member of the public that would like to address 11B, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Anyone? Okay. Seeing none, we'll close public comment on 11B and bring it back to the council. And why don't we start with Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First thing, I'd go back again for just one moment. Don, the $12,000 for well 9 is for the new pump. What's going to be the cost of treatment? So that's a separate issue, isn't it?
The treatment aspect of that is the additional chemicals and things that we will need to treat the extra 30 acres.
Is that included in the $12,000 for the replacement of the pump?
Partly, yes.
Oh, okay, great. No problem. Well, I'll start off by saying that tonight, we're not looking at our long-term solutions. We're just looking at the shorter-term issues that are here, and I can support what's before us tonight. We are in a drought. We've been in a drought for several years, and there's no telling how long it's going to last. Hopefully it will change this year, but ready for the Pearwood Basin property, and I would direct staff to continue the efforts for other short, long-term water supply strategies. But I got to think that there certainly has to be a way to use the water that the wastewater treatment facility water. We've got a lot of water there that there should be some way to come up with an idea that we can use that water for something productive. But I can support the measures before us tonight.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
I, too, can support the measures that we're looking at this evening. I haven't been in Santa Barbara when we went through the major drought scenario we went through there. I can tell you just can't start too soon. I'm very glad to see us moving forward with the landscape retrofit. I think that's probably going to far exceed the water savings that we actually realized. I'm just going to point out that it's really only 10%. If we were to get a 10% reduction, we wouldn't need any long-term solution at all, that we would actually be able to work within the water we have. And I think looking for that is certainly the cheapest way to go. I mean, and would be best for all water ratepayers. So I can concur with everything in front of us this evening, including I think one of the comments here is that we really do have to pursue multiple objectives because there's so many dead ends. You know, we thought we had a well that turned out not to be quite as productive as we thought. We talked about the oil-filled water at one point, and those things don't pan out, so we just have to pursue five or six possible paths in order to get one to work. So I can certainly support all of the short-term goals, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the long-term solutions would be. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thanks, Mayor. I, too, can support everything that's before us tonight. I'm very supportive of the conservation. I get a little wary when I see the odd and even days and such, because in my mind, I think the comment was what we don't want to do is have someone fiddle with the timer so much that they're actually now less efficient than if they're on a cycle of every 3 or 4 days. Obviously, every 3 or 4 day cycle, they're going to hit a Wednesday once in a while. They're going to hit a day that they're not supposed to be on. So I think the intent is that everybody watch what they're doing and truly try to conserve. And I think if we're meeting that goal, then we're doing well. So that would be my only comment on that section, that we understand why a sprinkler went off on a Wednesday. But beyond that, I constantly think about all the water that is going into the ocean from the treatment plant and wish there was a way that we could use that in some other way. But that may be something that we talk about in another long-term strategy session. So tonight I can support what's before us, and I'll cross my fingers with Oceano. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you. Well, we're at 99% or more water usage, so we have to do something. I kind of like the recommendation number one with the mandatory conservation measures because they're quantified, give somebody something to think about. I've got like a 5-year-old timer, clock, whatever on my sprinklers, but it has an infinite number of settings, so I can
see. We never quite get there, and I'm thinking that you know, it's one thing to throw a slide up there and let it circulate or let it cycle through, but people rarely pay attention to a heavy text slide like that one up on the screen right now, Don. No offense. But especially if it's, if it's followed by, more printed information. I think if we really want to connect with our community and get some results, we're going to have to they're going to have to see a face. And I would love for you, Don, or Steve to, if you're going to put some information up, do a narrative, have a camera shoot, do a 5 or 10 minute, here's what you can really do to help out the situation and get it up on Channel 20 and have them run it. Once again, we always talk about making better use of Channel 20, and we never seem to get around to it. And I think this is a critical enough issue for us to use all the tools that we have available, and that's one that continues to be underutilized. So I'd like to see that happen. You can show a picture of what we mean. Show a picture of a irrigation time clock. Here's some of the ways you can do the setting. Check your valves. Make sure none of them are leaking. Show a video of some water running down a gutter. That's going to attract attention. So all of those kinds of things. You can show, two bathtubs filling on a daily basis. Deal with that. But.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think you will be pleasantly surprised because I think we are starting to make some progress, even though I admit we have been talking about it for quite a while. We just worked on a weed abatement video that the fire department's working on. It's going to start airing, but this would be a great idea for the next one, and we're working with the League of California Cities in terms of our League of Women Voters to help us with a series of videos, and I think this would be a great one, and Don and I will work on it together and get some other information and commit to you to get something on within the month.
Well, one of the things that we suggested at our last SLOCOG meeting was to do one on rideshare and public transportation, and the SLOCOG staff was excited to do it, but you would know this, Kelly, but they were saying that if you go back to charter with anything under like 15 minutes or something in length, that they don't like to do it, or the charges are excessive. But if you put them together, what I suggested is, okay, take that issue, if you want to do a short vignette, put it together with a couple of things that we do and make one big 15-minute, video. The subject matter may change, but at least, we can do it economically that way and make better use of it. So I don't know if that's true, but maybe we ought to look into it and see if, what the rate structure is for the duration of a video that we would want to run on Channel 20, see if it varies. I just found out about that the other day. So
I think it's more about the programming of the videos.
Screen.
We're trying to react quickly so that the programs are timely. Like I said, we had weed abatement with all the fire concerns going on, trying to get that on. And then with this coming up, we'll try to get this information out fairly quickly because that'll be timely as people hear about this program.
The other thing I want to do was comment briefly on what Councilmember Arnold brought up a moment ago. As I recall, and I could very well be wrong, but I think it was 94, 96, and 98, we had record reservoir fills on those years. I know we had serious flooding all over the state in 94, 96. And I believe 98, we had a sizable rainfall, and I'm fairly certain that had we had extra capacity at Lopez, it would have been captured. The other thing is those years, at least 94 and 96, I know, were El Nino years. And I was just listening to, being the optimist that I am, I was just listening to the weather report yesterday on TV, and they were saying that El Nino is reconfiguring. And so their forecast is this winter, you know, if it continues, will probably be, you know, another record rainfall winter. So keep our fingers crossed and hope that happens. So I can support this as well, and I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move a resolution of the City Council of the City of Aurora Grande declaring a severely restricted water supply condition.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Discussion. And to be specific, your motion embodies all five staff recommendations as indicated in the staff report.
Can I do it that way, or do I have to do them?
Do them separately.
Including the other four staff recommendations to approve a one-year extension of the water agreement with Water Boys Plumbing, appropriate $12,000 for the water fund for purchase of a new pump for well number 9, appropriate $30,000 for the water availability fund for testing of a well site at the Pearwood Basin, and direct staff to continue efforts regarding proposed short-term and long-term supply strategies.
Okay. And we have a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Okay, that takes us to item 12, City Council Member Items. We do have one this evening, and you've already been introduced to it during our initial public comment. Just to sort of fill in the blanks, first of all, I want to acknowledge Mayor Pro Tem, because he was the one that brought it to my attention, I think, 3 or 4 weeks ago, and he heard it from a member of our community, I think one of his constituents out in the community. Prior to that, we really had no knowledge of the extent and the scope of what was happening out in Wasna Valley with this oil exploration project. When I checked in with staff, I did find out that there were some memoranda that floated from community development to the county regarding this item, and the action that's being floated out there is for a 20-year permit. So whether they find oil or not, they still, if this thing moves forward the way it is, they still have in their hand a 20-year permit, not only to drill, but to transport. That's certainly not what we had in mind. And in a subsequent memo, community development then from our city was had communicated with the county that we were looking for a focused EIR at a minimum, and that a mitigated negative declaration on the impacts of this project is not something that we would support. So there were two public meetings. I think the first one was out at the Portuguese Hall. I did not make that one, but I did make the second one, which was at South County Regional Center, and I think some of members of our audience were there as well. There were probably close to 300 people there, I would imagine. And there were some very good questions raised, and I was sort of disheartened at the lack of depth of the response from the county. those questions were not addressed, at least not even close to the level of satisfaction that I think our council would be concerned with. Also, on the getting back on the issue of the EIR, I think this thing, we have not had an opportunity, I think, to really sit as a council and hear this item, particularly the elements of this item that relate to the transportation plan. The other thing that was very troubling was that the county was looking at impacts from an EIR that was, I guess, done in 1980 or the early 80s. And as a result of that, and their thinking was that not much had changed out in the Wasna Valley, so it would not warrant going through the process of an EIR. I'm not certain whether or not that's a valid observation. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I would think that probably the population out in the Wasna Valley has maybe increased a little bit, but certainly the demographics of our city and the configuration of our city where the transportation would occur has changed since 1980. So with that said, this issue, in my estimation, is going to be somewhat controversial, I believe, within the city, and it certainly requires a public hearing. And I would strongly recommend to the council that this come back in the form of a public hearing, and that we give at least some preliminary direction to staff to figure out a date when that can occur. Steve has already taken some action to make sure that happens. Also, the level of interest would, I believe, preclude us from trying to combine it with a regular council agenda for a couple of different reasons. Number one, I think we're going to get many more people at the public hearing than this facility would allow in terms of capacity. And second, I believe it's going to be a long, protracted meeting, and one that we probably would not be able to
open during that period of time that was kind of easy to schedule without having to reschedule other activities would be the 10th. So I don't know how that works with the folks, but that would work good for the that would make it easy for scheduling the facility, let's put it that way.
I'll be gone.
Okay, was that just for the Women's Center?
We have not had a chance to check the scheduling availability of the Regional Center yet.
Okay. You're going to be gone?
I'm gone. As soon as our meeting of the 9th is over, I'll be gone for 5 days. So I'll be the week of 15th through the 21st of September, I'll be here. But I can tell you what I think of it right now.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, we're going to have to wait for that. What does the week of the 15th, could we look at perhaps some alternate dates, Steve, for if not the Women's Center, then the South County Regional Center?
Yeah, the Women's Club was not good that week, so we can look at the Regional Center. That's not a problem. We did have some internal conflicts. I believe the 18th is the Zone 3 board meeting, and I believe the 17th was the Sanitary District.
Sand District meeting. Well, this obviously, I think, would take precedence. And, you know, if I can get together with Joe, if I don't know the extent to which Zone 3 is, I don't know what your agenda looks like, but if we're forced into that Wednesday, I can probably talk to John Wallace and make sure the other two board members will be there, and, you know, I might be able to make that work.
Okay. The other date that week is the 15th, which is a Monday. It doesn't normally work quite as well, but it's available.
So we're talking about the 15th and what other day of September?
I think we're looking at 15th, 17th, and 18th.
League of Cities, isn't it right in there?
Yeah, it's 24th,
5th, 6th. Oh, at the end of the month.
The 15th works for me. The 17th is, you said the 17th? Mm-hmm. 17th is good
18th is bad.
Okay, so we would lose two people on the 18th anyway. What about you, Jim?
Yeah, I don't have any conflicts in there. Like, I can make an evening meeting work.
You're open, Chuck, that week?
The 15th. 15th, yeah, the whole week, actually.
Okay. Okay, why don't we look at the 15th or the 17th for the South County Regional Center, and we can firm that up between those two dates. Okay, and I'm assuming that I have consensus that this is something we have to do.
Oh, yes.
Most definitely.
Okay. All right. So for our guests here from the Wasna Valley Association, if you can just sort of spread the word back there that we're looking at either the 15th or the 17th of September for a public hearing, and it will more than likely be at the South County Regional Center. But there'll be much more information before then. Okay.
Yes,
all right. Yeah. It's a bad fact.
To follow up on council.
I believe you. I believe you, Steve.
Okay. All right. 16, community comments and suggestions. This is a final opportunity for anyone in the audience to come forward and comment on issues or items, whether they're on the agenda or not. Anyone? Okay. We'll close 16. And that will take us to item 17, which is adjournment. Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.